I was hoping that wasn't Jeremy saying, I've gone from a little late to a lot late.
Oh, is he coming?
He is. He's going to be a little late, though.
Cool.
He told us to just get started, which I am going to do because of the whole Seattle thing. I am working hard and I'm tired as fuck and I got another busy day tomorrow of editing. But you know what happens tomorrow? Oh, actually, hold on a sec. Well, no, this episode's not coming out for weeks, so I'm not going to mention it. Tomorrow, our first episode of Movies Are Us.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Motherfucker.
Nice. So are you gonna start like trying to like Movies Are Us 1 week, Wheel of Time 1 week and stuff like that? Or are you just gonna, okay, cool, like every other week on both of them? That's awesome.
Yeah, we're gonna alternate Movies Are Us and Wheel of Time. And then every other week, we're also going to, and I got them ready on this side. I can play them over here.
Chapter two.
What's that?
I can play the chapters over here too. I'm good to go.
Oh, okay, cool. I was getting ready just in case we needed it. So,
and then starting finally next week, I'll be back on my, because I've been holding off on Patreon for so long because I wanted to finally get it on a schedule. So next week, Time Pop Patreon will come out, and then 2 weeks later, Wheel of Time Patreon will come out, and then so on and so forth in perpetuity.
Cool. Do you need me to like pick out a Patreon movie and a next Movies R Us movie, or you got something in mind, or what?
We're gonna do Jumanji next for Patreon. To make sure that we hit a game next, a board game next time.
Wait, for Patreon or for Movies R Us?
For Movies R Us. And then Patreon, yes. We're going to do, I think...
Which Jumanji? The original?
The original, yeah.
That movie's fucking scary.
Jeremy and I haven't seen it, so it's going to be awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited then. Very cool, very cool. That was pretty fun. Those guys are crazy. I ended up talking to that. Me and Dane were drunk. I talked to that guy for another 20 minutes. Like, I got to go. My wife's going to kill me.
Dude, it was so much like, I didn't think I would notice it. I thought that it would just feel like a regular episode after a while, but I really felt that like live.
I did too.
Like I was on it. Like I knew people were there and like I was performing and it really gave me a rush that I haven't gotten in a while podcasting. Everyone, I am your, this is my bubble of evil, and these are my wolf brother. Well, this is my wolf brother. My wolf brothers are on the way, but this is my wolf brother.
And I will be your first of man trying to protect my small city state from the large evil empire that is Tyr. I don't know.
A stan.
Yeah. I'll come to your bedroom late at night, very scantily clad, and we'll try to make... an alliance, quote unquote.
Well, for everyone out there, by the time you hear this, it's been a long time since you've heard a good old-fashioned Wheel of Time book chapter. We haven't even released it yet, but you're about ready to get a... That's so weird. Have I really
It's not that long. I mean, we did the Bubbles of Evil. That's a book chapter-ish, so...
Well, that released last week. Next week is White Cloaks, and then 2 weeks after that is this episode.
Okay.
So it's like...
Fair enough. I don't know how recording works.
It's going to be almost March by the time people hear this. But that's okay. It's good. And we're, like we said 2 months ago, if you remember, you know, we're going every other week because we're not quite as popular during the off season. I'm trying to do some things to change that. If you guys out there listening want to change that, you know, get some conversations going. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell someone you hate on the bus. You know, we don't
want to make your ears bleed. Listen to these guys.
We don't discriminate. And you know what? And now, you know, while you're waiting for Wheel of Time, why don't you check out Movies R Us? We got another great podcast that we're using to fill all this extra time we have found now, where we're talking about movies about games and video games and board games and gamers and gaming and gaming
all that stuff.
Gamey meat and
and breaking transformers that aren't yours, you know,
all kinds of good stuff,
melting down GI Joes with, you know, WD-40 and lighters, you know, improvised flamethrowers, it's like, talk, G.I. Joe, and you melt them. It's like, Cobra didn't use those tactics, but I did.
Did you, I'm bringing this up on the wrong podcast, but while we're on the subject, did you ever freeze your, like, Star Wars characters?
I'm just Luke and Han and try to, you know, make, I would go, you know, cut birds open and pretend they were Tonto. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't do that. I think they smell bad on the outside.
We would. It must have been. I was a little bit young still to truly.
You probably froze them because you were in Montana, bro, and you had like snow, so you could just work out whole like Hoth scenes and stuff. I was in California, so
no, we were
tattooing all the way.
We took bowls of water and would put our guys in positions and then put them in the freezer. And it must have been. I was a little bit too young to fully appreciate.
Wait, like shoebox, like diorama style, like a scene.
No, it was just some people were probably doing cooler shit than me. Like I said, there were older kids that were like I think it was because of Han. I think it was our version of Carbonite.
Other kids
were probably doing cool shit, but I was like 3 and 4 at the time. So I was just like, here, Mom, put this coffee cup in the freezer.
I made a Carbonite Han out of cow shit. Because it was brown. No. Wait, never mind. Remember, there was a kid who lived up on the hill behind me, and like, he didn't have a ton of friends, but you know, when you're proximity and you're friends with people that made me, and like, he had the most awesome Star Wars toy setup. He had the entire like Ewok village and like, you know, the Bespin thing and like all the toy. It was pretty cool. And I'd go over there and he'd have it all set up, and like, we couldn't play with him. And you didn't know me when I was a kid, but you know me as an adult. I'm just like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. I can't touch this. I can't, like, yeah, it was,
dude,
like,
every time he
I would to- get, his mom would like take me home because I'd be like, I have to play with this. And then he'd freak out and then be like, you know, he'd like call my mom, like, can you come pick him up? Like,
I wish you watched Seinfeld. There's an amazing Seinfeld episode where one of his girlfriends inherits a bunch of toys from her dad. And so she doesn't play with them because they just remind her of her dad. So she's got all these shelves of classic toys. And Jerry winds up drugging her to put her to sleep so he can
play with them.
Play with the toy. And of course the episode is like, you know, like he's roofying her, you know, but all he wants to do is play with her G.I. Joes. He doesn't take advantage of her at all. It's funny, like at one point, like George is like, I thought things were going good. He goes, oh, the sex is great, but she won't let me play with her toys.
Oh, the 90s with the like dancing around rape humor. Oh my God.
It's
terrible. No. Porky's is another one. It's just like, you're like looking at the women in the bathroom. She's like, no wonder we're a bunch of fucking pervs, dude. Like, Jesus. Bunch of gun-toting pervy psychopaths.
Speaking of perverts, what's up, Jeremy?
What's up?
Jeremy's here. This guy looked through lots of holes in women's bathrooms, let me tell you. That's not true. That's not true.
You can't prove that.
There was this one time at band camp.
Not guilty.
Well, we've been trying to.
Jeremy's like, it was church camp, bitch, not band camp.
We've been trying to start this episode, and we keep on. We've basically done a mini Movies R Us in the last 10 minutes. So you're just in time. You're just in time to talk about Wheel of Time.
Well, I don't think my GarageBand's working, so hopefully you can get this off of Zoom.
Awesome. You sound fantastic.
You look fantastic.
Oh, thanks, baby.
You know why I can't see you right now?
we'll talk about my eyesight in the next episode.
There you go.
So we're talking about another Whirlpools in the Pattern. Is this our third quote from Whirlpools in the Pattern, Justin?
It is. This is a really long chapter, and we're going to cover Rand's Bubble of Evil, which is pretty short, but there's some important stuff in there for sure. I just figured we're going to start doing, just like you said, bro. I think I'm just going to start. I mean, we might skip chapters here and there, but I think we just do like one poignant thing from a chapter each time. I'm just going to start getting ahead of them. So there was just like, yeah, this is what we're doing. If we don't have something else to talk about.
I have tons of bookmarks. If we had to fly without a net, I could just be like, there's a bookmark in chapter 4. Let's go.
Right. But I think I'm just going to start trying to pick the most. And Jeremy, feel free, like, you know, where we're at. If you want to pick something that's poignant, like, please, you know, take some notes and throw it out there and we'll talk about it. But I think it'll be a faster way to get Desmond, like, he can listen to it great, but like for it to sink in these certain bookmarks,
seems like there's a lot of news coming up too, Justin.
I wanted to do next time, Des, if we can, I want to do like, obviously we have like a couple weeks till we record again. I want to like go from basically the end of season one, and I'm going to start like looking at What Up and scanning Twitter, see what kind of news I can find. I know, Jeremy, go ahead. And I know they were you going to talk about the episode names?
Oh, no, I haven't been watching. It's too depressing. I was just assuming you had.
You're just setting me up for a joke, you prick. Okay, that's cool. No, there was someone who has been cast as Jack Alsine, who is one of the prevalent kind of characters in the when Perrin goes back to Eamon's Field. And there is an episode, they release one of the episode names. It's called Golden Eyes, which there's at least one chapter called Golden Eyes, I believe. And so
it's a great Pierce Brosnan movie, too.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's just got Golden Eye, though, and a great.
I'm invincible.
It's a great game for an Nintendo.
Oh, dude, we could watch GoldenEye.
Oh, we have to watch GoldenEye and then talk about the game.
Yeah.
Yes.
God,
that's a good way to fucking get Oddjob into the fucking conversation. Let's go.
All right. So we're listening. So, yeah, I forget that this is a 2-hour long chapter. So the fact that we're doing our third quote from it is actually not that surprising. So, yeah, we've done Matt's Bubble of Evil. We've done Perrin's Bubble of Evil. Now we're going to do Rand's Bubble of Evil. We are Shadow Rising, Chapter 2, Whirlpools in the Pattern, 1 minute 15.
No, 1 hour.
1 hour. 1 hour and 15 minutes.
And 40 seconds if you really want to get down to it. And so basically, we've just went through, this is the same chapter, you know, Matt just had his little fracas with the cards coming to life and Perrin's axe came to life. Rand is alone in his room, asleep. He's awakened by a noise in his room, and there's actually a person in his room, but then this bubble of evil happens right afterwards, so, or during.
Here we go.
Outside in the darkness, a cock crowed. To Rand's surprise, Berylyn suddenly stared past him, eyes as big as teacups. Her mouth dropped open, and her slim throat corded with a scream that would not come. He spun, the yellow-red sword flashing back into his hands. Across the room, one of the stand mirrors threw his reflection back at him. A tall young man with reddish hair and gray eyes, wearing only white linen small clothes, and holding a sword carved from fire. The reflection stepped out onto the carpet, raising its sword. I have gone mad. Thought drifted on the borders of the void. No, she saw it. It's real. Movement to his left caught the corner of his eye. He twisted before he could think. Sword sweeping up in the moon rises over water. The blade slashed through the shape. His shape. Climbing out of a mirror on the wall. The form wavered, broke up like dust motes floating on air, vanished. Rand's reflection appeared in the mirror again, but even as it did, it put hands in the mirror frame. He was aware of movement in mirrors all around the room. Desperately, he stabbed at the mirror. Silvered glass shattered, yet it seemed that the image shattered first. He thought he heard a distant scream inside his head, his own scream screaming, fading. Even as shards of mirror fell, he lashed out with the one power. Every mirror in the room exploded silently, fountaining glass across the carpet. The dying scream in his head echoed again and again, sending shivers down his back. It was his voice. He could hardly believe it was not himself who made the sounds. He spun back to face the one that had gotten out, just in time to meet its attack, unfolding the fan to counter stones falling down the mountain. The figure leaped back, and suddenly Rand realized it was not alone. As quickly as he had smashed the mirrors, two more reflections had escaped. Now they stood facing him, three duplicates of himself down to the puckered round scar on his side, all staring at him, faces twisted with hatred and contempt, with a strange hunger. Only their eyes seemed empty, lifeless. Before he could take a breath, they rushed at him. Rand stepped sideways, pieces of broken mirror slicing his feet, ever sideways from stance to stance and form to form, trying to face only one at a time. He used everything Lan, Moraine's warder, had taught him of the sword in their daily practice. Had the three fought together, had they supported one another, he would have died in the first minute, but each fought him alone, as if the others did not exist. Even so, he could not stop their blades entirely. In minutes, blood ran down the side of his face, his chest, his arms. The old wound tore open, adding its flow to stain his small clothes with red. They had his skill as well as his face, and they were three to his one. Chairs and tables toppled. Priceless seafolk porcelain shattered on the carpet. He felt his strength ebbing. None of his cuts was major by itself, except the old wound, but altogether, he never thought of calling for help from the Aiel outside his door. The thick walls would stifle even a death scream. Whatever was done, he must do alone. He fought wrapped in the cold emotionlessness of the void, but fear scraped at its boundaries like wind-lashed branches scratching a window in the night. His blade slipped past its opponent to slash across a face just below the eyes. He could not help wincing. It was his face. Its owner sliding back just far enough to avoid a killing cut. Blood welled from the gash, veiling mouth and chin in dark crimson. But the ruined face did not change expression, and its empty eyes never flickered. It wanted him dead the way a starving man wanted food. Can anything kill them? All three bled from the wounds he had managed to inflict, but bleeding did not seem to slow them, as he knew it was slowing him. They tried to avoid his sword, but did not appear to realize they had been hurt. If they have been, he thought grimly. Light, if they bleed, they can be hurt. They must. He needed a respite, a moment to catch his breath, to gather himself. Suddenly he leaped from them onto the bed, rolling across its width. He sensed rather than saw blades slashing the sheets, barely missing his flesh. Staggering, he landed on his feet, caught at a small table to steady himself. The shining gold-worked silver bowl on the table wobbled. One of his doubles had climbed onto the torn bed, kicking goose feathers as it padded across warily, sword at the ready. The other two came slowly around, still ignoring each other, intent only on him. Their eyes glistened like glass. Rand shuddered as pain stabbed his hand on the table. An image of himself, no more than 6 inches tall, drew back its small sword. Instinctively, he grabbed the figure before it could stab again. It writhed in his grip, baring teeth at him. He became aware of small movements all around the room, of small reflections by the score stepping out of polished silver. His hand began to numb, to grow cold, as if the thing were sucking the warmth out of his flesh. The heat of Sidene swelled inside him. A rushing filled his head, and the heat flowed into his icy hand. Suddenly, the small figure burst like a bubble, and he felt something flow into him from the bursting. Some little portion of his lost strength. He jerked as tiny jolts of vitality seemed to pelt him. When he raised his head, wondering why he was not dead, the small reflections he had half-glimpsed were gone. The three larger stood wavering as if his gain in strength had been their loss. Yet as he looked up, they steadied on their feet and came on, if more cautiously. He backed away, thinking furiously, sword threatening first one and then another. If he continued to fight them as he had been, they would kill him sooner or later. He knew that as surely as he knew he was bleeding. But something linked the reflections. Absorbing the small one, the far-off thought made him queasy, but that was what it had been, had not only brought the others with it, it had also affected the bigger, for a moment at least. If he could do the same to one of them, it might destroy all three. Even thinking of absorbing them made him vaguely aware of wanting to empty his stomach. But he did not know another way. I don't know this way. How did I do it? Light, what did I do? He had to grapple with one of them, to touch it at least. He was somehow sure of that. But if he tried to get that close, he would have three blades through him in as many heartbeats. Reflections. How much are they still reflections? Hoping he was not being a fool, if he was, he might well be a dead one, he let his sword vanish. He was ready to bring it back on the instant, but when his carved fire blade winked out of existence, the others did too. For a moment, confusion painted three copies of his face, one a bloody ruin. But before he could seize one of them, they leaped for him, all four crashing to the floor in a tangle of grappling limbs, rolling across the glass-littered carpet. Cold soaked into Rand. Numbness crept along his limbs, through his bones, until he barely felt the shards of mirror, the slivers of porcelain grinding into his flesh. Something close to panic flickered across the emptiness surrounding him. He might have made a fatal mistake. They were larger than the one he had absorbed, and they were drawing more heat from him. And not only heat. As he grew colder, the glassy gray eyes staring into his took on life. With chill certainty, he knew that if he died, that would not end the struggle. The three would turn on one another until only one remained, and that one would have his life, his memories, would be him. Stubbornly, he fought, struggling harder the weaker he became. He pulled on Sidene, trying to fill himself with its heat. Even the stomach-turning taint was welcome, for the more of it he felt, the more Sidene suffused him. If his stomach could rebel, then he was still alive, and if he lived, he could fight. But how? How? What did I do before? Sidene raged through him till it seemed that if he survived his attackers, he would only be consumed by the power. How did I do it? All he could do was pull at Sidene and try, reach, strain. One of the three vanished. Rand felt it slide into him. It was as if he had fallen from a height, flat onto stony ground, and then the other two together. The impact flung him onto his back, where he lay staring up at the worked plaster ceiling with its gilded bosses, lay luxuriating in the fact that he was still breathing. The power still swelled in every crevice of his being. He wanted to spew up every meal he had ever eaten. He felt so alive that, by comparison, life not soaked in Sidene was living a shadow. He could smell the beeswax of the candles and the oil in the lamps. He could feel every fiber of the carpet against his back. He could feel every gash in his flesh, every cut, every nick, every bruise. But he held on to Sidene. One of the Forsaken had tried to kill him. Or all of them had. It must have been that. Unless the Dark One was free already, in which case he did not think he would have faced anything as easy or as simple as this. So he held his link to the true source. Unless I did it myself, can I hate what I am enough to try to kill myself? Without even knowing it? Light, I have to learn to control it. I have to.
You could probably stop it. I don't know. 125.
Holy shit.
So
where, I was just looking, I was trying to figure out where he was. I was just glancing at fandom. Where the fuck is he?
He's in the Stone of Tyr right now.
But he was just, did he just come out of Dream World, whatever the fuck it's called?
Maybe. He was asleep and he was having some nightmares about being chased by Aes Sedai. Just, I don't know if it was necessarily the Dream World or if it was one of the Forsaken messing with him or whatever, but he was having nightmares and then he wakes up to a sound in his room and it's Berylyn or Berylaine?
Berylaine.
Berylaine, it's her. And she's, you know, notoriously beautiful. She is the head of state and it's a very small, small like city state that, you know, Tyr is always kind of trying to take over, but because they have a decent amount of resources and good, I would say what good, probably just their, where they're located, they're hard to kind of take over. So she's, but she's very shrewd politically, and she's willing to, you know, do whatever it takes to to secure her nation's power, and she's trying to, you know, give her all to the Dragon Reborn, if you will.
Is Berlane in the room right now?
Yeah, she walks in, like, she tries to, like, creep on him.
So she watched that whole thing.
Yeah, she, yeah, dude, definitely. Like, I had you stop it because it just was getting kind of long, but he, right before that, he kind of pushed her back with air because she was, like, trying to push up on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she's like basically up against the wall, and he's like protecting her the whole time while he's doing all this stuff. But she's like kind of stuck to the wall.
Yeah, he just like pins her against the wall in air, like right before to kind of get, because she kind of comes up and touches his face, and she's like trying to.
She's creeping on him, bro.
Yeah, she's it's actually kind of cringy. She's it's very you know, if a dude were doing it, you'd be like, this is super rapey. And also, like, women that hot coming into your bedroom, most men are like, no, you know, I can't. I'm betrothed to Egwene. Like, that's just a fucking lie.
But also, I think there's a little bit of, he feels that she's manipulating him, too. And
well, that's the thing, is you get to see Rand's intelligence, for sure.
Well, and you get to see that he has a very, like, his temper is, like, it's always on an edge. Always.
Especially
like,
right now. He's on a razor's edge, for sure.
Is that...
You'll never... Go ahead, Des.
Is that temper or anxiety?
Both. I would probably say both. It's both. It's stress. It's more stress, and then it comes out as temper.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually a very good observation.
Yeah, and he gets, you know, he starts to keep such a... He's one of those people, he becomes wound so tightly. Like, that dude needs a blunt big time. Like, he, you know, he starts to, like Jeremy said, he starts to walk this fine line of, like, anxiety and just... The sense of duty is one thing that you... Is there from Rand... from the very beginning, and the more he trains with Lan and, you know, being around other people with honor, you see, like, that's where Rand lives, you know, that's his wheelhouse, is that he is a warrior and he's always trying to do his best for everyone around him. And he knows, he's, for most heroes in stories and stuff, they don't, like, you know, even Anakin, oh, I'm the chosen one, he really doesn't grasp it until, you know, he fucking takes Mace's arm off. He's like, fuck it, I gotta do it. You know, Rand is keenly aware that he's the chosen one from the beginning of our story, and he takes it very seriously, and he shoulders that burden really quickly, and he seems to act like he knows what it is. You know, obviously he's just a kid, but he accepts every challenge, I'd say, as best he can, as far as trying to be noble. So
yeah, you got to think, in less than a little over a year, he goes from being a shepherd to telling
King
High Lords of Tyr that, like, if you don't do this, what I've asked you to do, I'm going to start hanging you one by one.
Yeah, hardcore.
And he's like, and I'm not joking.
Against, that's very not Rand, you know, as a character. He hates himself every second, even like while he's saying it. He's just like, I can't believe I'm saying this.
Yeah, we'll get into it in a couple of chapters, but I was, you know, like I said, I'm listening. When I do get a chance to listen to this book, I'm listening to it very quickly, trying to get through it. And like, at one point I'm like, why is Rand in this political meeting telling everybody what to do with their crops? Like, what the fuck?
Because like anything, rich people try to fucking withhold it and get, you know, more money than they,
but like
they should. And just
when you just go back to the Star Wars allegory, like if your main goal is to kill Darth Vader, like, don't worry about the corn for a minute.
Yeah, we're not worried about taxes right now. So yeah, that was a weird thing. You know, I never thought about that actually. I just thought, well, like, you know, he's trying to establish himself in a way that makes sense to the people he's trying to establish that rule over, and to himself as well, from being from a small town. Well, you pay taxes, you take your crops to the market, you know, like that's what he understands. So
that's true. That's true.
You know, I always thought of it as like he's just kind of learning how to be a leader and a ruler.
And I guess,
and he's always very just.
If he knows that he's going to need an army, then
he knows from, like, that's the thing. You know, you miss, you know, he's running across country, kind of insane, and then he gets to the Stone of Tyr. Immediately, he just starts to study and find out, like, oh, gunshots, good times. All right, country. But he realizes early on, it was like a mini 14 or something, like pow, 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 pow. Like, but you know, he realized early on, he's going to need people, he's going to need armies, and he's going to need to be a conqueror, even though it kind of goes against his nature. So absolutely does.
All jokes aside, what's the deal with the cocks?
I don't know. I think it's just like a maybe Jeremy.
It's letting you know that it's all happening at the same time.
Oh, okay,
Jeremy. Let's see, that's why we keep this fun guy around, right?
There we go. Thank you, Jeremy. Because I'm like,
I do one thing well.
I legit thought I was trying to like, is there some sort of, I like looked up, was there a significance to cocks crowing in death? And there's a few, but it's like, they're just, you know, one's from Albania, one's from China, one's from, you know, like whatever.
It's not a cock crows, it's the cock crows. Like yes, they're all hearing the same.
It's the same cock crow. Yes.
Yeah, they should have said that, the cock crowed. But then they're like, wait, are we talking about land? I don't know. you get to see though, like in this.
You're talking about Alana. And her waters.
Yeah, she's definitely the cock.
Cock-a-doodle-doo.
Wow.
For more Thank the Light, head on over to patreon.com/soundsawesome. That's patreon.com/soundsawesome.
But you see, Robert Jordan, his description, his skills of descriptive writing, and it's very on display in this chapter, 100%.
It's so funny going back and listening to the last three books again. After I'd only probably read them the first time, that was it. You see the distinct changes and differences in their writing, you know? And you're never going to find another Robert Jordan. The guy is a engineer who was in Vietnam and taught at the Citadel.
Was he in Korea?
They're never going to make another one of those guys. What's that?
No. Was he in Korea too or just Vietnam?
No, Vietnam. No, I don't think he was old enough to go to be in Korea. And then Brandon Sanderson was probably an indoor kid who was really into theater and probably D&D.
And read a lot.
Good luck.
Read a lot of fantasy.
There's nothing wrong with that, yes. First of all.
No, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But getting him to write exactly like the other guy and getting that guy's headspace is going to be very hard.
Yeah.
It's really funny because you and like definitely obviously the White Cloaks fellows, I think, they're not the biggest fans of Brandon Sanderson. And I'm like, I thought that if it were left to Robert Jordan to finish, he wouldn't have finished it as well as Brandon Sanderson. Like, say what you want, love or hate. Like, wow. I don't love some things about. I don't, because of where he was at in his life and his mortality, like, I don't think he had the energy and the chutzpah to really write the ferocity and the furious pace that the last three books were at. I don't think he would have done it as well.
Well, and he wouldn't have been like,
maybe it would have been different. Maybe certain aspects would have been better, if you will, for people who loved it. But I think he captured some of the feelings of, you know, The Great Hunt, The Dragon Reborn, Fires of Heaven, Shadow. I think there were elements of that felt like those books to me as far as pacing and how exciting it was. You could definitely feel the difference in the characters, but I still liked it. I hate you, Jeremy.
Not having read all of the books and not, you know, this is just speaking about humans. This is what I know about humans. Robert Jordan might never have finished it. Like, he might have been like, I'm gonna write three more books. And then he'd write two of them and go, I'm going to write three more books. And then
George R. R. Martin, we're looking at you. Finish the fucking books.
And Sanderson was like, he had a job to do to finish this fucking story. And
yeah, and I think he did it justice as well as anybody could have.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, Dez. It's not like there's anybody that is doing that currently right now that we would know about. There's nobody.
Doing what?
just writing nonsense.
You just said George R. R. Martin. Like, somebody who's just never going to finish.
Yeah.
There's actually another guy. I don't think I've ever brought his name up. There's a guy named Patrick Rothfuss. And he has supposed to be a three-book series. And he got the first two books out. The first one was called In the Name of the Wind. And the second one is The Wise Man's Fear. And then this third book is supposed to have been out like three or four years ago.
In the Heat of the Night is what it's going to be called.
In the Heat of the Night. Yeah. How do you know?
I don't know. I feel it.
Well, you know what? I didn't realize this either. Kelly is really into Outlander. I don't know if any of you guys have watched that.
Well, I've heard of the TV show. I know it's the best on books. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't realize it was a book series either until recently. Cause she's been like jacked about it. Like, she watched the first.
Isn't it time travel-y?
Yeah. The fact that it's not about the time travel. It's just, you know, the time travel is just a reason to tell a story in many different times.
We don't do that kind of stuff on Time Pop, please.
That's right.
We want to talk about time travel, not your period piece.
Yeah, we want to talk about time travel movies, not time travel mechanics in your period piece.
But that one is, they're wrapping up that show without the last book being written.
Oh, again, really?
Like 19 seasons of it. Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's officially a societal problem.
Just, yeah, oh, really?
These are great books. Let's start making a TV show.
My fear is that if Robert Jordan, you know, he was so sick and stuff and he would have had people helping him, is that it would have ended up like a Stephen King ending and I would have been so disappointed. So I was okay with how Sanderson ended it.
Well, even perfectly healthy, I think he just would have had a hard time putting a bow on it. He'd just been like, well, I don't want Rand's story to like end.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I would say, Justin, too, that it's not that I dislike Brandon Sanderson stuff. It's just that it's not Robert Jordan. It's just not Robert Jordan. And that's okay. And he, like you said, he finished it. He finished it in three books. Robert Jordan said he was going to finish it in one book, the last book, no matter how big it was. But he always said weird stuff like that. You know, he said he said he was going to finish the series in three books. He said he was going to finish it in six books. And then he also said that if he died, that no one's going to finish the books.
Well, guess what? When you're dead, fucking your wife can do whatever she wants with your intellectual.
Well, he changed his mind on that too. He did.
Yeah.
He was just mad because He was mad because everybody would be like, you need to finish these books because you're going to die pretty soon. He's like, fuck you. Hey, screw you, pal.
Yeah, eat shit, buddy. But yeah. I mean, I think I don't, you know, that would have been my biggest fear is had he never finished him. That would have really sucked because I think the way they finished him was like, you definitely see, you know, shut up.
Your nightmare come true.
No, like I said, you know, you definitely see the difference in the way he writes some of the characters, especially like Matt and stuff. But some of the stuff that he did do, I thought was great. And it didn't matter that it wasn't necessarily Robert Jordan. Some of the you know, like the scene with Rand and Maradon and stuff when he just goes there and just fucking wreck shop. Like
that was cool.
I don't give a fuck.
I agree.
Robert Jordan. It's one of the coolest things in all 14 books. It's so amazing. And there's another time when Rand does some shit that's pretty fucking cool. And there's just a lot of awesome stuff. The battle stuff with Matt in the end, even though like some of his changes of character, I don't love. Same with Min. He wrote Min pretty terribly. You stupid Luby. What the fuck is that? He's a sheep.
You know what? He changed. It was Blood and Ashes. And then for that, the last three books, it was Bloody Ashes.
Bloody Ashes, yeah.
Which
I mean, it depended on who said it, but Matt was always the Two Rivers folks were always Blood and Ashes.
Yeah, and it just went away. It was weird.
Yeah,
the little things you remember.
So back to this chapter, real quick.
I was gonna say, yeah.
So when the bubbles bubble up, do they always hit all three Tarviren?
No. No, as it goes along, it goes everywhere. Like it starts hitting.
And there
everywhere.
there was probably other shit that went alongside of this. I would say it's off screen. We're not hearing about it. I would assume that there were more. The other bubbles of evil, you know, affect the world. I'd say at large. I don't know, Jeremy. I don't know.
It starts getting like everywhere. Like you'll hear it from other people too. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll other be like, they'll tell a story about some weird shit, and you'll be like, oh, that was a bubble of evil. Got it. This whole chapter is very wordy, but this was one of the chapters that I really was like, wow, this is kind of different than anything I've ever read, you know. And this there are subtle things in this scene with Rand that are so fucking creepy. When he talks about how he starts to feel cold when the other ones start to touch him and their eyes start to take on more life, and how they would fight each other to the death till there was only one left, and then that one would be Rand. Like, that's just a creepy, you know, doppelganger.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers type of thing.
You know, that's some Twilight. That's some Twilight Zone, you know.
And there's a 6-inch tall one.
Episode shit.
There's four Rands.
There's a bunch of them. Think about Army of Darkness when the mirror shatters.
That's all I can think of.
Of little ones.
It's that's little ass. What He's happens. Like, hey.
Yeah, it's like that, but Rand picks him up and then he absorbs all the little ones in one shot, which is gross in itself. And, you know, like he's like, I feel vitality from all these little pelts of like energy it's like when you're playing, you know, Devil May Cry and you're sucking up souls or something. It's fucking creepy.
It'd be even grosser if you had to eat him. He's all,
I got like Gulliver's Travels.
We're going to play my favorite game. I just thought of a new game while we were listening to this chapter. This is going to be my new favorite game. Will we see this in a show?
Ooh, no. Not a chance.
Not a chance.
Not a chance.
Which you would think it would be easy to pull this one off because it's already done on screen similarly, like the Army of Darkness or something done similarly. So you should be able to pull off all three of these real quick, and they probably won't. I'm getting real white cloaky on this show lately. I hope season three better be good and positive because it's going to be.
I've been reading some stuff.
I know. Shut up, Jeremy.
I'm going to say it's a bummer just because this would be one of, like, if they had the balls to make this chapter one episode and we just see, it's just basically three parts. Since they're happening simultaneously, like, you see, like, they cut, like, they cut back from commercial and they show the same cock crowing every time. And then they go to Matt and then they go to Rand. Yeah. Like,
yeah. And yeah. You know what? This really speaks to the character of your three main characters. It really hits at the heart of them, right? Perrin is there and he's dealing with Fael and how much he cares about her and the axe that he hates and how it's trying to kill him. Yeah, and what's the main thing he tries to do? He tries to get Fael out of the way so she doesn't get killed. Matt is there dicing, gambling with his buddies, but at the same time, they're like kind of talking down to about peasants, and then they look over and be like, "Oh shoot, I forgot he's a peasant." And then Matt brings it up like, "You know where I came from, right?" That type of thing. You know,
he's so gangster.
Yeah, and then Rand also is like, he's trying to be manipulated at the time by someone who's using their talents. And he's just like, he explodes about it and actually gets to the point where he's just like, not going to hurt her, but was like, you know, being ruthless about it. And you get to see all these things.
He was like, you need to fucking go.
Basically. Yeah. And so you get to see all these things about their character, and it's great story building and all that stuff. And there's zero chance it's going to be on the show.
Here's how it comes on the show. This is how it happens on the show. We see Perrin's, we see Rand's, and they make up a Nynaeve.
I don't think it'll be. I would, you know what? I would almost go for that. I would almost go for that because we got two out of three.
And Matt is somewhere else.
Matt's in Tanchico.
Tanchico, maybe. The waste. We don't know.
Matt's luck has not been like, the only reason we think Matt might be lucky is because of the book. Like, if you've never read the books, you just think he's just okay.
This cat's rolling, unlucky as fuck.
Or he's just okay rolling dice occasionally.
Yeah.
Basically,
that's it for this one. Like I said, I was just saying the explanation, the way he explains the sliding into them of the smaller ones. And then at the end, how creeped out Berylyn is. She's just like, fuck, dude, this was the biggest mistake I've ever made. And then Rand just kind of like accepts it. Like, okay, like that was fucked up, but okay. And he's just drenched in blood and he scolds Berylyn and like sends her on her way. And it's just, you're just like, Jesus Christ.
She never tries to hit on him ever again, right? She immediately
I think she avoids talking to him or being in the same room with him after this. I don't think they're ever
like this again. Scars her for life.
Yeah, she's like, fuck that guy.
So Jeremy, you listened to our last two episodes, right? Do you have any?
Yes, I did.
Do you have any corrections or omissions?
Oh man, I wish
that you can remember. I know you did when you were listening.
You put me on the spot.
I know.
And I'll have to hit you up on that. I want to say there was one thing that you guys had said.
Well, because you texted us immediately, like our episode came out at 8 o'clock that morning. You texted us at 8:30, and you're like, "You motherfuckers!"
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, after that season ended, it was like a gut punch, man. I saw nothing that I wanted. And then after the season was over, I was like, oh, you know, normally I would be hitting up all the guys and it's like, okay, what did you think? What did you think? What did you think? And then what's coming up? When they start talking about what's coming up, I'm like, oh, I don't even care.
Suddenly Jeremy doesn't care anymore.
I don't care.
You know what's not coming up? My penis.
My excitement for the show.
My expectations. They are still very low.
Very, very low. And somehow they still managed to not meet them.
Yeah, isn't it? Isn't that crazy?
So, I mean, those are some of the things, like, I want to do, you know, get some news and see where we're at. I don't, you know, how are we going to get from Falm to where the fuck are we going next season? Tanchico, the waste? That's what I've heard. How are we going to get there? Are they just going to be there?
You heard that Matt's going to be in Tanchico with Min, right?
I did hear that. Not the waste.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Great.
Not in the waste. Not going to the waste.
So everyone out there, not the next episode, because we're going to record the next episode now. But next time we record, we'll probably just, I think we should definitely do a news.
The next episode after these two, obviously we have another episode after this chapter. But yeah, you know, we'll just do a deep dive.
Which we're recording like 4 weeks. So we'll have some stuff to do. I'm going to start recording my outro later because things are evolving so much right now with addresses and websites and all that stuff that I will do my own outro. Thank you for listening to Thank the Light, the Wheel of Time podcast. Please like, subscribe, and tell a friend about Thank the Light. And please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/soundsawesome. That's patreon.com/soundsawesome. Where for $3 a month, you can receive an exclusive episode every 2 weeks.
weeks. If you would like to continue to support the show for free, we just ask again that you please like, subscribe, and tell a friend about Thank the Light. Check us out on Twitter and Instagram at Wolf Brothers at Parsta Ailman. We are Wolf Brothers at Parsta Ailman, or Facebook, where we are WOT:the Wheel of Time podcast. Send questions and comments to thankthelight@gmail.com. That is thankthelight@gmail.com. Looking for another great podcast to listen to while you wait for the next episode of Thank the Light? Head on over to whatsoundsawesome.com and check out our great podcast lineup. We have comedy spirituality, time travel movies, fitness and nutrition, and coming soon, we have Movies Are Us, where you guessed it, we're going to be talking about movies that you could find at the wonderful brick and mortar store of Toys R Us. If it's a game, if it's a board game, if it's a video game, if it's just a good old-fashioned toy and they have turned it into a movie, we are going to discuss it very soon. Stay posted for the soon-to-be-released podcast, Movies Are Us. You can find it at whatsoundsawesome.com, along with All the Answers, Truth Not Trends, Time Pop, Be Brave, and That Fitness Couple. You can find it at whatsoundsawesome.com or wherever you find fine, free podcasts. And I will just say that on that note, this is my stomach turning taint.
Remember, it was only one cock. That's it.
Same cock all three times. And, you know, I'll just say this. Do you think I've made of stone, woman?
Jeremy, Justin, I told you I would get him to say cock. You said I couldn't do it.
You're right. It's context, though. It's context, you know. He doesn't mean penis. He means rooster, everybody.
He does.
Justin. Hey, you always find water in shade.
Going on with you? I understand there's a young lady in your life. Hmm?
Well, actually, it's kind of a funny story because she has this amazing toy collection, and last night I finally got to play with them.
Well, sounds like things are progressing.
Actually, she doesn't even know about the toys. I gave her the wrong kind of medicine, and I guess she passed out.
What do you mean, wrong kind of medicine?
She's even got that old Mattel football game that we love.
Oh, come on. You gotta get me over there.
Wait a minute. You mean to say that you drugged a woman so you could take advantage of her toys?
Jerry. Now, what you do with your personal life is your business. But when you're on my set, you clean it up, mister.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
Oh, the sex is wild, but she's got this incredible toy collection and she won't let me near it.
I don't understand, woman.
Here comes one.